fruitless and irregular expenditure, where they are paying people because they left or they left before they left a contract end. I want to know that the department, is it difficult for the department to trace the people who occupied the building? Because if you say a person must start using that building, you should know the particulars of the person, where he was staying before, ID, everything. So if it's not possible for them to trace the people who are living in the building before the list ends. Thank you.
Thank you very much. November.
Thank you, Jefferson. First of all, let me join you by saying congratulations, and this is one step forward. But still, there is a lot of things where we can improve in the department. But first of all, I want to know, last year there was a lot of vacancies. How far are we? Are all vacancies being filled, or what's happening? That's my first one. And my second question, I can't get this now from the sick book because I didn't really mark it, the annual report. There was something that was saying there is a 200 and whatever million rand that will be there for some years, because it's not due to ours, it's due to other departments. Is there a strategy that this thing will be over by a year or two or whatever? I don't know which page it is, but I did this something to check. The other one is that from this report on page 6, program 1, corporate services, I want to know that the young professionals, interns, learners, and everything that is written there, were these professionals recruited from all the provinces, and if that is it, is there not a way that we could be shown that from this province we had one, from this one, two, and so on, so that the others should also sort of can encourage our young ones to study in this. What is the next one? Yeah. There are some of these things that I'm not really much. Chapter 10 is a from the market.
I know, correct. I'll just start with Babu Stoll, and then we'll take responses.
And this is Yabong, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, on page 5, when they talk about items.
Presentation of the report or the presentation?
No, of the
presentation.
The page 5, page 3, but it's not number 5. Number 5.
Okay, go ahead.
Adjudication of tender to prevent fraud and corruption. When the presenters say there's some misbehavior and they don't do. So what I want to find out is what the government are doing to ensure that they are facing the issue of behavior and the people are being true. Another chair is on page 4. No, not this one. It's on page 6. Where they are talking about this achievement, targeting achievement from achievement for head brokers and sub brokers. What I want to find out is what the department are doing or either to help those who are not being absorbed by internally department. So we found that about 279 were about active trained were 29, but only one which was being absorbed by internal. So what the department is doing to help or to facilitate to help those who are not being absorbed. And here on page on the document, on page 158, on the quality opinion, if you check that report, it says the entire the entity is not complete. The process of the control is also to be reconciling the authority. It indicates the receivable at year end with the underlying accounting record. It shows that when you check this report, then there is nothing that the department has said about this year. And then when you check again down there, I was unable to determine the effect of time, date of money, and the information supporting the individual trade receivables account could not be provided for audit purposes. This seems need to be certified by the department. And Chair, on the report,
I think let's take some responses. Let me just start with the service level agreement. Just to us over and above the five, maybe you should give us a list of the five that came back.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have them, because I'm specifically interested to check if correctional services, we are meeting them soon. We have signed already what is the problem. But give that one as well. About the vacancies, we get different figures. Right?
Mm.
And then if you go through the annual report, you're not sure whether you are increasing or decreasing or whatever, but there is still a high level of posts that seem to be needed to be filled. If you can clarify that. And because it's got to do with our capacity to deliver. I'm going to ask a different question later in terms of what do we need as a full profile, what we still need to do, so that we get the department up to speed with the requisite skills, the GDL, you know, and the other skills that we might need.
Thank you, Chair. At the outset, DCF does not sign the document. They have indicated that the SLA is with the DG, with the National Commissioner, and he is looking at the latest follow-up with the DCF.
But that's an old story.
Yes.
What makes
but
it new today?
But that's the latest that we've got as well. So we followed up about a week and a half ago with them.
Okay.
I'll submit the departments that have signed. I will submit that via the secretariat. I think most of the departments have come back and they've acknowledged receipt of the SLA. I think appended to the SLA is also service delivery standards. And that is a level of compliance both for the Department of Public Works as well as for the user department. And I think some of them are also sort of reluctant to sign because there would be commitments on their part as well in terms of, for example, submitting their user requirements 3 years in advance. Once they sign that, they have to basically comply to that. The signing off in terms of user departments of cost analysis and budgets, et cetera, timelessly in terms of the time stipulated on the SDS and other obligations as tenants. So there are one-on-ones, there are discussions with key account managers with the users. For example, 2 weeks ago I met with the Department of Defense and we went through the entire SLA and there are some material amendments that we agreed upon. So the meetings are transpiring, I beg your pardon. And the other thing is that we've, like I've indicated, National Treasury has also intervened and indicated to departments if the SLAs are not signed, that they can that they're actually not going to support their budget input. So that has also been done. And like I said, there will be letters going through from DG and Minister to their counterparts as well. At least 99% of the user departments have acknowledged receipt and indicated that they are looking at the documents, etc.
address the issue around the young professionals in the interest and the outlook and the regional outlook, as well as the issue of the absorption of the accidents that were trained and why did we only absorb one. Whilst they are thinking, I would like to address the issue around the adjudication of tenders. Honourable members, the issue there is less the issue of the processes. If you take a bid, for example, bid committee members sign a form where people are disclosing conflicts of interest. Formally, that is what is expected. People sign and disclose. But what we are picking, and we are picking at even the regions, as I said, based on our visit to UNTAD, is that service providers then are able to say, I believe I have been awarded, or not even I believe, Chair, to say, I know I have been awarded the tender. In fact, one has gone as far as saying, I know I've been awarded the tender, but the CFO is blocking the tender.
Sure.
Now, there is absolutely no no amount of making people sign is going to help you identify who gave that information.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a concern. Because the rules around SEM are very specific. That to convey that kind of information whilst the process is not complete undermines the entire process. And so these are the issues, Chair, that we are concerned about. It is that people leak that information. The second, honourable members, is that the issues of financial disclosures are made by all the members of the SMS senior management. But the information is also known to people below SMS, and those individuals, at present, there is nothing that requires them to submit on an annual basis their disclosure of financial interest. And it's something we're looking at and implementing as a department from our own policy of extending the issue of disclosures to beyond SMS members and looking at some of the individuals who may be involved in the SEM process. So that's the issue today, that the only way we're going to resolve it is where we can find examples, and we are hoping potentially that this SIU investigation will help in some of those issues, because they are doing data mining and looking at various databases to try and see whether employees' details link to some of the supplier details, and hopefully out of that process we'll also get some level of assistance. The second issue that the Honourable Member raised on 148 related to under revenue and receivables, where the Auditor General has asserted that we did not complete the process of reconciling differences between trade receivables at year end with the underlying accounting records. Honourable members, you will remember that the CFO acknowledged that whilst we had done the recons at the global account level, we had not done individual debtors recons for each and every one of the client departments. Hence, at the moment after the audit, that process is about 90% complete, where we have gone in and did the recons now at an individual level. Hence this qualification, Honourable Member. The second issue is that I was unable to determine the effect of the time value of money, as the information supporting the individual trade receivable accounts could not be provided for audit purposes. It is directly linked, Honourable Member, because to do the individual record, you need to be able to get the comparative analysis of all the invoices that have been raised under each individual data on a month-to-month basis. Determining the time value of money is when you look at the analysis of the invoices over time and then do a fair valuation of those invoices to say what is the fair market value of the trade receivables balances. And because that information has not been done, it is also the reason why the recon has not been done. So if you do the recon, you are able then to do the fair valuation of the trade receivables balances. So it is indeed correct, Honorable Member, that because we didn't do the individual recon, we could do the fair valuation. Thank you.
Responding to the fruitless expenditure, the client departments that we are referring to is the national departments that we provide accommodation for. It is not like we cannot trace them, we know them, we are interacting with them. We've written letters to those client departments to request them to pay, because they have vacated the premises before the lease could come to an end. In the conclusion of the contract with the landlord, it is the DPW that enters into a contract with the landlord. And therefore, if there is any default, we are still obligated to pay. But what we have done now is to go back to client departments like SAPS and Home Affairs, where they had previously occupied those premises and they moved out to pay the department.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, DG, Honorable Chair. With respect to the area of vacancies, the report shows that we are not making progress. We slowed down with respect to the appointments of people from outside, the reasons being that towards the end of the financial year, we saw a slight challenge with respect to the compensation budget. I think CFO, when she reported, she indicated that we had to request to shift some of the funding from the goods and services to the compensation so that we should be able to cover the compensation costs. So we slowed down a bit. We are now at 80%. And then also the other reason is that when we don't fill vacancies quickly, they get worse because of the termination based on the resignation, based on death, based on transfers to other departments. So in that area we slowed down. In the area of young professionals, I agree that we were supposed to have brought this down in provinces. We can supply that, which can actually give an indication per region how many young professionals were appointed or recruited and then how many were appointed in the department. With respect to also the artisans, trainees, the 29 that are indicated that they are still under training in the department. The intention is that we train for purpose of ensuring that we appoint them in the department, in the workshops. We train for purpose of appointing them. And then those who leave the programs, they are those who get better offers outside before they can be appointed in the department. But we've got a program that says from level 2 to 8, we advertise internally for purpose of ensuring that these young professionals compete among themselves. We appoint from the programs of young professionals who are training in the department. So there is a strategy that seeks to absorb those people who are trained in the department. So that one, we have covered that one. But in terms of the provinces, I think we can make this available. Maybe immediately after this meeting, we can actually facilitate that we share the information of how many per province. Thanks very much, Chair and DJ.
Any further?
Yeah. Chair, the issue that was also raised by the Honourable Members, the question was, have all the vacancies been filled? And I think it's a very important question. And I'd like the CFO to address that question. But more importantly, Jim, I have yet not to approve a request to fill a vacancy since I've joined the department. But the issue that I've raised and I've send it back to our HR unit is that the approvals are piecemeal. You get a request to fill a vacancy for a works manager in Bloemfontein today, and then in 2 weeks' time you get another request for the filling of a project manager in Bloemfontein. And what I've said to HR is I would like to get a comprehensive request for the approval of all critical vacancies in a region, for example, because then it enables it enables us, one, to get clarity about which of the positions are being filled. And given the ongoing issue of the limitations in resources, we want regions to focus on filling the critical positions. For example, in our visit to Mthatha yesterday, honorable members, we agreed and fast-tracked the process for them to appoint two project managers, two people in property, two plant operators, and a human resource person. But I said to the region, for as long as we get these requests piecemeal, we lose sight of the big picture, and therefore are not able to say if we have to make decisions, which of the two posts is more critical than the other. The second issue related to that, Chair, was understanding what is the impact of filling these vacancies in the work that we do as a department. And the issue of filling the project managers, for example, in the Mthatha region, has a lot to do with our understanding and the infrastructure. And the issue that I was raising to the regional managers was that we want to make sure that the appointments that we make become a catalyst, that we're able to do our work much more effectively, and therefore we move forward as a department. We are currently doing roadshows to all of our regions, and it's the issue that we're focusing on, saying, let's understand what are your critical vacancies, how are they going to link to the department achieving its objective, how are they going to link to the broader objectives of the department around making sure that we deliver on our mandate. And so, Chair, that's the approach we are taking. CFO.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think the DG has covered a number of critical issues. What we are looking at currently is the baseline to say to what extent can we prioritize funds, because all our attempts to get money from National Treasury have never yielded a positive result, particularly under compensation of employees. And what was mentioned in terms of having a comprehensive report of all the vacancies is going to enable us to focus funds to the areas that are identified as being critical. HR is working on the submission, and I think based on the information, we'll be able to speed up the
Did you say that the report
from
run over to deal with the employees' issues? I thought you told us that earlier.
The rollover is on our infrastructure budget. What we did was to prioritize through the adjustment estimates from goods and services to compensation, but that is still not adequate to fund all the vacancies.
What do you need to fund all the vacancies?
How much do we need? We will give you the costing once we conclude that report.
Let's just go back so that we've got the same understanding. On page 5 of your presentation, where you deal with that last block, it talks about the target. National Treasury approves 50% of additional funds requested through the MTO and the Justice Escrow. I want you to put that into context, because my understanding was that it had to do with the filling of new posts, or what they are misunderstanding, or
Chair, you recall in the previous year we had over expenditure under compensation.
Yes.
So we used that to clear the 48 million that we overspent. And we used that the money that we prioritized also to fill some of the vacant posts that we managed to fill during the year 2009-10. But we are saying over and above that, the funds that we prioritized did not enable us to fill all the critical vacant posts in the department. We need far more than the 145 million that we managed to shift to fill all the vacant posts.
Are you going to provide us with that appreciation of not how much you need necessarily only, but also which are the critical posts that need to be filled almost immediately that are not funded? Because I see the level of regulations are very high as well. Just note it. I want us to return to that matter as well. Don't answer now. But thanks for that. Let's go to the following. We said Doma Mugani, Babu Rabutapi, and then followed Babu Kaela. And then I just continue my list by taking Mamu Lengwani, Doman, and Guni. And then we go to the next one. Quick one.
Thank you, Chairperson. The DG on his presentation here. Oh, okay.
The DG on his presentation this morning, he talked about the poverty alleviation. And as far as I know, and as far as I'm concerned, I haven't seen public works dealing with poverty alleviation anywhere. Maybe they are dealing with that in townships and urban areas. In the deep rurals, I haven't seen them. We've got a lot of people in rural areas who are starving, who are supposed to be helped out, but the Department of Public Works is somewhere not in the rural areas. I need an explanation as to why are they not going right in the rural areas. Number two, this is the most property. Public Works and other government departments, they are leasing private properties, leaving their government buildings empty. Why is it that they do that? For instance, to make an example, in Arnold Street in Devon, there are big buildings for public works. In Mayville, there are big buildings for public works, but they go and hire Liberty Building across the road. Why is that? They have big space in Mayville where they can take other stuff from Alwar Street to Mayville so that they can operate from that branch. Another issue, the third issue, public works, whenever they are taking projects to the people, more especially in the rurals, we have got different organizations there. Some they respect government dealing, some they don't. I've got two different places where public works put up their ranks without consultation with the operators, and they objected to that. As a result, the rank is not being used. That is Pungashe. Another rank at Dondota next to Mbangi, it was 1.9 million when it was built. It's only Colts who are using that rank. Nobody is using it. They refused. We spoke to the chairperson, totally refused. He said, we were not consulted. Why is public works spend money in such a bad manner like that?
For me. Okay, let's take responses. Oh, Rauta. Sorry.
Thank you, sir. Chairperson, mine is about the buildings that are being occupied by officials in Johannesburg and also those that are being occupied by SAGs. I just want to know what has the department done about this. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I think
think we should take responses. Let's take the response on this, Mr. Domen, and then we come to the next one. Gaila was supposed to be next, is outside. Can we, those are very straightforward ones.
Thank you, Chair. The CFO will address the issue of buildings that are occupied by officials and thugs in Johannesburg. I'm going to ask Mr. Rick Samuel to address the issue around the projects in KwaZulu-Natal, in Kungasi and Dondase.
Dondota.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. As well as the issue of why do we continue leasing private properties when they are government buildings. And Mr. Stanley Henderson will address the issue of what is our role in poverty alleviation. Honorable members, you would recall that we are the leader and coordinator of the Expanded Public Works Program. The primary focus of the Expanded Works Program is to alleviate poverty and unemployment by creating work opportunities, albeit their nature is that they are short term, they are not permanent. And a huge amount of EPWP has to focus on projects run by municipalities, particularly rural municipalities. An issue of concern for a lot of the rural municipalities has been how do they get into EPWP projects and how do they get funding for those EPWP projects. And the huge focus of the summit last week was in helping municipalities understand what is it that they need to do to be able to begin launching EPWP projects, but more importantly, what type of EPWP projects would yield jobs and therefore alleviate unemployment and poverty within their regions. And our focus has always been on labor-intensive projects, and that we then were able to assist municipalities by providing some technical information in terms of what kind of projects, when do they get to be able to qualify for EPWP, how do they get paid. And I would like Mr. Henderson to really address that issue briefly, because I think it is a very important issue. Thank you.
Thank you, DG, Chair, honourable members. We have indeed made concerted efforts to broaden or to expand the department's rural footprint, so to speak. And one particular initiative was that through the introduction of the wage incentive. We know that in the urban areas, especially the bigger cities, that they have much more capacity to report on the EPWP and to implement projects. What we have done, though, was to say we have to make it easier for rural municipalities to be able to access the wage incentive, and therefore the threshold set for cities was what we call 6 FTEs, and for rural municipalities, 0, which means from the point on that they start reporting and they have verified the data, they are in a position to access the EPWP wage incentive. That's the first point. We have changed our approach to make it possible for broader rural involvement in the EPWP. We have also seen that the technical capacity that DG referred to, that's obviously a shorter, or rather, the lack of capacity is bigger in the rural municipalities. And that's why through our technical assistance program, in partnership with a whole range of other departments, but especially also through the Lever Trust, through the Sienza Manji project of the driven by the DBSA, we are providing technical support to those municipalities design the projects and programs in such a way that they can implement it through the labor intensive technologies in order to maximize creation of work opportunities. Because that's where we are. We have to say that if a project is not designed in such a way that it can create maximum work opportunities, we have seen that municipalities will keep on using machine-based technologies. That's the way that the department has actually changed our approach. Thank you.
Thank you.
On the leasing part, before we can decide on whether we go private building or our own building, there is an investment analysis that gets undertaken by Subsection. And I would want to hand over to her, because some of the buildings mentioned could belong to provincial or national, and therefore she'll be in a position to tell us the process that leads us to a decision that says we go to a private building as opposed to our own stock.
Chairperson and honourable member, it is true that we conduct an options analysis for every requirement that is over 5,000 square metres. The reality of the situation is that we've got various buildings on the rehab program that is aligned to the budget provision by National Treasury. Civitas was the completed building. We're now working on AgriVal. We started HD Divis. We intend demolishing that particular state building and building that up so that we can reduce our lease portfolio and move into state-owned, increase our state-owned portfolio rather. But most of the options come through in terms of long-term lease for a five-year period, so that it gives us time to go to National Treasury, that we can then get a budget for construction or apply another methodology, be it a build, operator transfer, or PPP. So we started in the past 2 years, this is how we've started operating in terms of asset management best practice. We also, prior to us approving a lease, we basically look at the state stock and what is it that we have, both on a national level and a regional level. What we don't do, and I want to acknowledge the honourable member indicating, for example, the case in point in Mabel, that's a provincial public works building. So we need to cut across the sphere, so we will look at that as well. But Aliwell Street is the building there occupied by public works. That building is totally utilised, and therefore we have to acquire more space in close proximity to the existing building across that EP centre. So that is true. But we will look at Mabel, and perhaps we can put other user departments in there. So thank you for that. That's basically our long-term strategies that we're working on. We've got building drawings, etc., and we've appointed consultants to maximize the usage on our strategic buildings. Thank you. Relevant to the building in Johannesburg, Chair, via you, if we could get the name of that building, and perhaps we could then organize a site visit, and maybe we can determine what is our way forward on this particular building. If that's okay. The name.
The one that is adjacent with us.
Yes. So we can take that.
It's several.
Yeah.
Okay.
Several.
Yeah. Speak to the MEC. Yeah. She'll give you all the details.
Yeah.
We have spoken about this many times.
Mm.
So,
what
do we do that follow in this fashion? So, we don't just come here to complain. Let's ask the National Department of Public Works to investigate this issue of Johannesburg about the buildings. That's one. We will go there with others. But at least come back to us before we go into recess, before the end of this year. To tell us, at least a preliminary report, you see a lot of steps have been taken to deal with the issues of criminality as well.
Thank you, Chair. I've already noted, Chair, to follow up with the MEC. I suspect that it's the MEC for Infrastructure Development, Nefet Masmoko. I've noted that to follow up on that particular on those buildings, and we'll come back to the committee as soon as possible, Chair.
Sure. Sure. So, we'll speak. Oh,
I'd like to pick the brains of some of my colleagues who have institutional memory, but the situation is that the projects were put up by DPW local government under the old CPPWP program, and at that stage there was an acknowledgement on the part of the department that the facilities were underutilized, and there was a program that was put in place to review the reuse of those particular facilities. At that stage, I think my colleague was involved, and she'll be able to give you more information on those particular projects.
I prefer here that we get a proper written report on the state and profile of those things, just where they come from, where we are, and what is envisaged in the future. Because we've got to draw some lessons about some of these matters. Autobiographies pay reports in power so that we can all share with members, because other than that, we'll just listen and so on. If we're in Durban, you remember, we could maybe also we can still go back to check some of the things later on in life. But we just want to close some of the chapters. The issue that relates to poverty alleviation, I know that some members are waiting to engage with some of the issues. I like the way Boma Gubane has raised it. You see, it's not that he's unaware of the programs that we're having. The basic thing here is that you've got all these grand programs, but when you check the levels of poverty, it's not happening on the ground. I think that's the basic thing in terms of how do our programs speak to reality. And it is in that context that I also appreciated EPWP somewhat with local government. Because our assessment is also that local government doesn't have a clue some of in terms of what should they be doing. We had a strategic planning workshop of the committee last year in November last year. And we acknowledged that, listen, we've got so much grant programs, but they are not anywhere to be seen on the ground in some of the constituencies. And we said to members, adopt a constituency or local municipality and just check how public works is performing in those municipalities. I can tell you, then that's where you're going to see reality. Just to give an example, one of them that I went to, three things came up. There was a road that was built with public works money, surely went down. You see, some people are following up on that matter. You see, there's a building that was the provincial public works was delivered, incomplete. You see? So we need a system that says, let's track what we're doing and the quality of the work that we do, because it looks like people, you know, when it's public works, they think it's uncle's farm, you see. You just do as you please. So we need to close some of the gaps. I won't mention the constituency now, but some people will know which constituency I'm talking about. And the rest of the members have got similar experiences. And it's got public works nationally might not even know about what is happening in some of the areas because of the relationship that you've got with problems. We need to at some point deal with those matters, because the name that is dragged in the mud is that on the public works all the time. Let me take the next one. Babu Gaela, I jumped you because you left. You have put you for last now. I'm taking Babu Nengwane, Babu Domen, Uni, and then come to you. Tell up in him. Now, age before.
Thank you, Shepard. My first question is about the policy regulation. Especially on the Yama. Actually, my question is around the asset management. And because I've got a feeling that maybe if we had passed the Kiyama or the Kiyama filtered down to the local government, we wouldn't be having this problem. Especially now because even the assets we know, they are not, we are not too sure whether they belong to the local government or they belong to the provincial government. some of them. And I'm not sure, because it looks like somewhere along the line there is a disjunction between what we agreed on last year, or between the plan, strategic plan and the budget. Because we were told that some of the vesting has been given to this new department, the rural development. Yeah, but here, according to the report, we are told that the valuation models developed and vesting guidelines are currently being developed. It looks like by DPW. And again, this CBE bill is not even on the picture, according to the policy review. And really, I thought we could have something on it before it's too late. We have the association bill under review, ASMA under review, but this CBE bill, which is very, very crucial for our country, it's not even on the picture. It looks like it's been taken for whatever happened to the rest of me. My second it's not a, yeah, it is a question. It's about the retired personnel in DPW. Roughly, it's quite a big number, besides those who died and those who were expelled. Do we have a plan about the skills transfer from those, the old ones, and the ongoing plan? This person is old and is going to retire. How much skills has he or she transferred to the new generation? Or something like that. Like the person I know, who used to be in DPW for quite a long time, was said to be the institutional, he has got the institutional memory about the assets. You ask him about anything, he'll tell you this is where this is. So, do we have any young people understanding those?
You're speaking about Andre?
Yes, sir. I want to mention the name. That's why I'm saying there's some disjunction between the skill, the budget and the strategic plan. For instance, on the energy efficiency act, although I didn't go thoroughly, I didn't get anything, but I could see that it's not in the new budget. The energy efficiency, which was a national project. Lastly, the other thing was about the vesting, which is we said it was about 65% in the last budget review, but now that is given to rural development. I think that's all so far. Others have been asked by my colleagues. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dolo.
Thank you very much, Chair. I was also covered with quite a number of questions. In general, I just want to ask the DG the summit that he referred to. I'm a bit disappointed that a multi-party delegation of this committee was not invited by the department. I think the department must try in the future to do that with such important events. We know we can't always do that. I mean, we are covered with transport, but it's
the accommodation only that the department will have to pay, and then more of us can be part of that, and we can really get the necessary knowledge and make a contribution. Thank you very much if you will consider that in the future. Then, sir, I really feel for the department on the immovable asset register. I agree that a lot of the properties, why do you need the valuation on them? And the valuation will, after 2 or 3 years, differ whether the maintenance was kept. And my feeling is that there really should be 2 lists, and that the Auditor General, you know, must be engaged in this, that there might be, say, an A list that you evaluate, because that is necessary. But then there are also a lot of buildings, a B list perhaps, that is not necessary, because then we'll have this qualified audit opinion all along, and we won't make any progress. So I just wanted to express that view, that one really engaged on this issue. You've said that there were engagements by this committee before I came on it with the Auditor General, and that the department might not be able to deal with this whole issue. So that is another matter to look at. Chair, then just another matter. The DG referred to a lot of contractors complaining that they are not paid. I just specifically want to ask, does the department have to enter in a lot of mediation? Because, I mean, this is a department with a lot of contracts and buildings, and there are always disagreements along the road. So I would like to have a sense of mediation that you have to engage in to deal with differences. And also in this regard, how the department deals with all these normal complaints that you probably will have. The DG said that he's inundated with calls. I was thinking of an ombudsman for the department, or let me separate it, you know, because I've learned with pensions at a certain stage in the Western Cape, or the grants actually, they were so busy dealing with inquiries that they couldn't do their normal work, you know, and one must have an appreciation for this, that there be somebody that deals with those, and that can be sort of a little bit more impartial than getting to the same people that's dealing with a contract just dealing with inquiries and payment. I also just want to ask about, second last thing is about the criticism of the department that buildings are leased not at market value. What is your problem there? It might be market value when the lease starts, but then things happen in that area, and suddenly you have a problem, and they point the finger at you, but you've entered into a contract when the economy was at a different stage. So I would like just to ask about what's going on there. Then you say that you take reasonable steps before you write off debt. What I'm concerned about is interdepartmental debt, and I would like to know more about it. I can understand that private people may disappear or go bankrupt, but once you're writing debt off of other departments, the state, Then I ask serious questions. What is the problem with that, or is it perhaps accounts which are not clear, and there's ongoing disputes that you get to the point it's no not worth going on? So I would just like to have some clarity on that. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you very much. Can we take responses and then take another two before the next?
Thank you, Honourable Chair and members. I would like the DPG for policy to respond to the issues relating to policy and regulation including the CDE bill, as well as the DG for AIM, particularly on the issues relating to GIAMA investing and the issues relating to us and the Department of Rural Development, as well as the issue relating to the energy efficiency. And then the CFO to address some of the issues relating to contractors not being paid. Whilst they are thinking, Chair, I'd like to acknowledge the Honourable Member's issue and request that around the invitation to the EPWP Summit. First, apologies, and secondly, the comment is noted, Honourable Member. We will make sure that going forward we do exactly that. I also wish to acknowledge the comment around the immovable assets as a potential solution of creating the two lists. One, those buildings that do need valuation and those that do not. And I think it's something important. Around mediation relating to contractors, there's a lot of work that is being done by the department throughout the regions. Invariably, things go wrong, and people try and resolve the issues with the people at the local level. And ultimately, when that blockage is there and the people are frustrated, they either use the channel of talk to the minister using that hotline, or they talk to the DG hotline, or people using the presidential hotline, which is the responses from that presidential hotline are channeled through the DG's office. What is important, whilst some of the issues can take a lot of time, it is important for us to attend to them, because they also become an opportunity to give us an indication of what are some of the challenges. And at times the challenges are at the regions, which are relatively far removed at times from head office. And it gives us an opportunity to intervene, but it also gives us an opportunity of having a clear understanding whether some of these challenges, the nature thereof, has to do with lack of compliance with the policies and the processes, or the mere human capital issues. So whilst it may be time consuming, Honourable Members, but it is also a wonderful opportunity for us as senior management to get into grips with some of the challenges that what I would call ordinary people are experiencing with the department. And therefore, it puts us in a position of being able to use those complaints to effect some of the changes, so that going forward, in general, there's a general improvement. The CFO will address the issue around the writing off of the debts, particularly the intergovernmental debts. On the issue of retired personnel and the skills transfer, it's a very difficult issue. It's difficult at two levels. One, I have received a number of submissions through the office where there's been request, particularly in projects and project management, for certain retiring persons to have their contracts extended for an additional 2 years. One, so that we don't lose that experience in the short term. Two, to effect the skills transfer. But the question that I've raised is, if we have not had the skills transfer for the past 30 years, what guarantees do we have that in the next 2 years the individual will be able to transfer the skills? And this is a very difficult issue, Honourable Members, because it is, one, an issue that reflects some of the challenges around capacity, because you can only transfer the skills if you have the people working with you in your team on an ongoing basis.
where, for example, in project management, you've got a shortage of project managers, where you even find that some of the projects are being run by inexperienced managers, which in an ideal situation, you would have wanted those inexperienced managers to be paired with experienced project managers. So that's one issue. The second issue is the issue that was raised by Mr. Bugela around the movements of personnel, where we are able to get interns, and then they go through our internship program, but they get better offers elsewhere. And it is also an issue with young professionals, because given the shortages of built environment skills in general, it therefore results in a situation where young professionals are much more fluid in moving to greener pastures, which becomes very difficult. But it is something that we are working on. I've had engagements with some of the universities just around how we can work around some of these issues, so that perhaps the issue of the knowledge transfer is not dependent on the individual, but is institutionalized by way of very specific programs that we can put people through to quickly get them to get the skills and the institutional memory, which is a very important thing for us. If the DDG for policy could start, followed by DDG aim, and then the CFO.
Thank you, DJ and honourable members. The members will remember that we started engaging the local government on the extension of GIAMA immediately after the honourable members passed the GIAMA Act and NCOP and the ascension by the president. At that time, we were looking at the easiest way to extend the principles or the implementation of GIAMA. We looked mainly in their existing acts, the Municipal Assistance Act plus the MSAA, and recognizing the differences in the structure, the building blocks of local government, they are totally different to that of provincial and national government. And the members will remember that even the PSMA could not be applied exactly as it does at local government and at national level because of those differences. At that time, we worked with them and went through their act to identify all the principles that we have in GIAMA as it stands and in their laws as it stands, and we thought that would be the easiest way. And we recommended accordingly to them that they must change their act. I think it took a little bit of time from their side because of other priorities, but recently we just learned that they've written a memo to their minister recommending as such. Having sat with the honorable members recently and them expressing possible interest that rather than extending on the existing act, maybe we develop a new act or we amend GIAMA, we have written a memo, an internal memo within the department to just outline what are the differences and what is our recommendation, and the department must engage, and so that we can engage with local government before their minister approves. Because at this point in time, the advice that is with them is that let's extend through the existing legislation. I think at some point, after we've done the internal consultation as ExCo, and after that it goes to the minister, first you need to come back to the honorable members to engage on the best option to extend the principles. So the situation is as that. They have a submission with the minister. We are hoping that whatever decision or proposal that comes out of the ESO, out of the minister, will go back and engage with them, either to agree that they go ahead with their legislation or we take a different route. So this is how far we are with the extension. On the SACBE bill, the bill was withdrawn for further consultation, but what we have done, there were a number of areas that required attention, hence we wanted to amend the bill. While we are in the process of consultation, we have done quite a number of things understood when we're trying to change the bill. One of which is the issue of registration. The honourable members will remember that, you know, with all these councils especially, it was difficult to get students to be registered into the profession. Some complaining that it takes them 7 years, and when they are asked questions, when they go to make presentations, they are not related to the profession. There were issues of universities that were not accredited, or especially historical disadvantaged universities that were not accredited, the programs that were not accredited as we would have expected. The bill was meant to address those. While the discussions are still going on in the department, what we have done now, a number of them, just that I don't have the information here in front of me, it was one of the things was lack of policy. Because before they can do the accreditation, there are a number of policies that need to be there. I think all together, all of them, they have, because they are the same, all the councils, they are the same. They have to have about a total of 13 policies that should be in place. So we are saying we are not going to wait for the legislation process to be reintroduced again, but we are looking at those policies. The policies that, for instance, would have to do with the identification of work, that would force anybody that is a professional to be registered, so that if you are a professional engineer, there's certain work that you need to do, but if you are at a lesser level category, there's certain work to protect the safety of the public. We are engaging them all the time about the issues of transformation. So I'm saying, while the bill is not back yet, but all the issues that were raised, that were of concern, that we expected to address with the amendment of the bill, we are dealing with them.
Thank you, Chair. The vesting guidelines have been developed in joint partnership with Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. It includes the provinces who have input into the document, the Surveyor General as part of the team, and until recently they even included the State Attorney's Office, because each one of these departments, entities, etc., have a role to play, so that we could fast-track vesting. And the Department of Rural Development will be responsible for vesting of all properties that requires to be vested that are from the, for example, the former TVD, TVDC state, etc. They would take that responsibility, and DPW will be responsible to lead the process for all properties that require to be vested, properties that require to be vested on their asset register, and that would include properties where they're responsible for custodial powers, for example, the endowment properties of Department of Defense, etc. So that is how the responsibilities are structured at the moment. Relevant to the lead portfolio and some of our rentals not being market related, when we do an assessment, we use the benchmark being the Rota report. We also look at being the fact that we're the largest state entity or even entity that leases. I think we have the biggest portfolio where we lease from the private sector. We're able to go to the asset register and discern what rentals, etc., we pay. What actually compounds the issue is the tenant installations. You have user departments varying in terms of what they require as PIs. And if a landlord, they provide anything from 250 Rand to 650 Rand for tenants, they allocate in terms of their tender, they allocate those amounts for TI. If it exceeds, and in most instances, government departments, especially relevant to being security conscious, etc., the TI actually exceeds,
in some instances that the rental amounts are amortized to pay for those tenant installations, etc., because they are prerequisites for the particular government department to function. The energy efficiency, we've been allocated 35 million in the 2009-2010 financial year, and we are allocated this financial year 75 million. Simultaneously, we've also entered into shared savings contracts, etc. So we have been allocated a budget for this financial year. Thanks, Chair. Relating to the writing off of debt, as you can see that we haven't written anything off to date, it is because we are still pursuing and investigating means and ways of recovering from client departments. The bulk of this debt really comes from intergovernmental debt, and we are working closely with the departments and National Treasury to find a way of recovering the amount. The PMTE has to be compliant with GAAP, and therefore the reason why we're talking about writing off, it will depend on the statements and the fair valuing of our debtors before we can even decide to write off. So there is a concerted effort to follow through until a point where it becomes uneconomical to pursue the debt.
Some of the issues that are raised raise something that is bothering me. Sometimes this vesting issue has been a vexed question. And if the department speaks, you speak as if, no, this matter is under control. Whilst we know that the capacity in the Surveyor General's office is diminished, that the deeds office is in a state of I don't know what. So all I'm saying is that we don't want to keep on coming to the same thing. If we analyze a problem that we need to resolve, let's look into all the issues so that it's not just a matter of, that's what I'm saying, you must also answer the questions that are not asked, because we'll believe you to say this matter is under control. And then next time you come here, you raise the old questions to say we cannot do it because of the following inefficiencies or lack of capacity in external institutions. So maybe we just have to pack this thing, because I think we don't want to return to it in a manner that creates uneasiness between us. And I'm just raising that one. The issue about the CBE, we are convinced that we need legislation as soon as possible. And the reasons for the withdrawal of that CBE bill still left the bitter taste in the mouth of some members who were dealing with that. It's good to deal with policy issues. But if you still have a situation where there is a perception of reality, that some of the councils are there for gatekeeping, then no amount of policy negotiations is going to assist you. We need to enforce legislation here. So we have to come back to this question. Like you are saying, maybe you must come at a separate meeting to come and just deal with these issues. This identification of work has been going on for many years. how can you do such a thing for over 2, 3, 4 years just talking one policy? You see? So I agree, I hear what you're saying, that there is work happening, but it's not assisting the critical issue that we have to resolve of not frustrating the training, experiential training of graduates, particularly black graduates, of not frustrating people after the fact when you go to university and see that the course that you're studying is not accredited. Who suffers? The students, the parents, you see? So we have met with the professional counselors as well and raised some of the issues. But there is clear resistance in the relationship between the CBE and the professional council. We need to close the gap. I'm just raising that as well. DG, the issue of mentoring. I hear what you're saying, what are the gaps? You see, some people who are supposed to graduate skills also need to be upskilled. I don't know whether you've got a mentorship program in the department. If you don't have, or a policy, whatever you have, go and ask that thing and strengthen this matter so that we don't have to return to it from time to time, because skill development is a critical area for the country. When we passed the Skills Development Act, I think it was in 96, we were sure that we get into a massive skills development revolution. We made resources available. That's why the CTAs are sitting with billions. Because the issue is not the issue of money. It's the issue of how do we ensure that we train our people. So, let's just take it up a bit. Let's not just be satisfied with what we do every day and so on and say that things are happening. Okay.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you, DG. I want to start my presentation from a premise that says, after my little report the last time, the minister called me and asked me to accompany the director at the regional Mafikeng, regional office of the department, to assist in terms of identifying some of the properties that I've known for some time. To the director supplies, those properties are not even registered with anybody. They are neither in the books of the department, neither in the individual who are residing in those houses. So it is very disappointing, very disturbing.
Mm.
But they said they will take the matter up. I'm expecting that they soon will get the report as to what is happening with that. My interest is too much on the question of the EPWP, Mr. Henderson. I want to strengthen the call by my colleague that it was a mistake by not inviting the portfolio committee to that summit. Actually, suicidal. Because yeah, that's very, very serious. Because the intention is to leave the portfolio committee outside the information that was gathered there, or the inputs made by the various municipalities. Because let me tell you the danger that we as the portfolio committee will face is to go to the municipalities where we reside, and that thing is not happening. EPWP is not happening. You've got the municipality with less capacity. Here am I, Mr. Mgoni, knows very well that every municipality is expected in its procurement systems to ensure that part of its work is shared with the EPWP. How do we have that question becomes a very big one for me to answer as a public representative. What do you say? My colleague says in the rural communities, where the rural municipalities, you don't have that. That is not happening. Let me just openly say, I'm from Brads. You know, Brads, the rural area in the northwest. There are serious problems because the municipality is surrounded by 80% its rural community. Now you are sitting only with a 20%, which is now your Brads town and your RDPS port town. Now, you know, in your presentation here, it's about, you said it's 85 municipalities that are involved, eh? 85 municipalities that are involved. 130 municipalities. And now if you check the number of the municipalities that you have, the 130, it's a fraction. Now, as such, you know, it tells that the we are sitting with a serious problem, because I don't know what the reason of that other municipalities are not interested in this one. But surely, if you say in your Google pillar, you've got the, you said how many, what is the number there? In your Google pillar. I can't remember the what's the number of the
fish? Okay. We can leave the numbers, just tell us the
story.
Yeah.
Now, the Vogue pillar, it was earmarked for entrepreneur development, construction entrepreneur development. Now, what is actually the outcome of the summit in relation to those municipalities procuring projects for entrepreneurs developed from the Vogue pillar project? You know, now that is very important, because you say you go to my municipality and develop construction entrepreneurs there, and then suddenly you find your municipality is not interested in EPWP projects or in labor intensive method projects. They are not interested because they've got their own plans. What is the intervention of the department? What do you say you municipality are failing our program? What systems are in place to ensure that you hold that municipality accountable? Development in our rural areas, I'm telling you, it's far from over. But now, if you say to us that with the skills development, you know, in relation with your CETA, you know, working together situation, whilst putting infrastructure development at my rural home, but you'll be also developing these people with skills relevant to whatever that is being done. Now, my worry is that maybe the summit was able to answer this question, that soon after here, after the summit, because this, you know, we've had so many summits, now we summit-related country, we are not, you know, hands-on approach kind of a country. After that summit, how do we ensure, I haven't seen the document, but I think my assumption tells me that the summit was able to answer this question, that how are they going to ensure that all the municipalities, when they procure, at least 50% or 60% of their project goes to, labor-intensive construction methods. Let me pause for now, Chair.
Thank you. No, let me first give you all the dangerous suicidal methods. And we are not sure. Let me also thank particularly Mr. Doman and yourself, Mr. Mbuni, for raising this matter again. It was raised in our previous meeting and we have recorded that. And we have raised the following. Okay, let me put it this way. The summit has agreed that it must be an annual event. So you'll have to give us the date in advance so that we must budget for it from the portfolio committee. Because I think that it's only fair that we do that. So that we, if the department wants to meet us halfway, something that we should and we can be able to consider. But I just want to close it like that, because it was the first summer, the trial and error. We also just got an invitation from the department. We went there, but it was a good exercise. So let me just assure members that it shouldn't happen like that again. It's an important, it was an important summit. Also taking note that we shouldn't become a country of summits. We must be able to have a clear implementation plan after the summit. I just wanted to deal with the dangerous suicidal matters so that they don't come again. And I think the DG has also acceded that, yes, we've noted this matter. You still want to deal with the same matter that we have done?
Just a little follow-up, if you
speak quickly, because the whole guy has been waiting very patiently.
Thank you. Chair, you see, this very matter is very much surprising, because you ask yourself, what is it that the department wanted to achieve? We about other municipalities, because at the end of the day, South Africa is comprised of all both rural and urban and metro municipalities, you see. But now, without rural municipalities...
Now, for that, yes. Maybe we should use another mic, because that one... use another one, or... because, it's making a lot of echo.
Yes, sir. Just to conclude, now my concern is whether we have summits, whether we are invited in future, but without other municipalities, we are not going to achieve anything, sir. Thank you very much.
Okay. I'm sure the department will be able to answer that. Not now. Relax. No, guys. We reserve the best for now.
Yeah. Thank you. Talking of summits, I do not want to get into details here. What I would suggest it is that you have a summit of contractors, because they have got a lot of complaints. It's prudent that you must have a summit of contractors and getting them all on board. Thank you. Chairperson, Mamupi is on your slide 19. One is very happy with your input on that slide. At least the skills development is taking off, and one is very happy with that, and one would say keep it up, be happy with that one. DG, intergovernmental split. On your slide number 28, that's right, is it? Yeah, 28. No, not 28, where have I missed? The one that said fruitless and wasteful expenditure on 14. Where you mentioned that your service providers have provided you with a VAT clearance certificate. Now, contextually, you either advertise a tender, whichever, but requirements are put there that once you don't supply your VAT clearance certificate, what happens with that tender? Disqualified. Now, one wonders, why haven't your officials disqualified those tenders? Because that is very clear, that is law, that's a contractual law. And if they haven't disqualified them, what happened? Is there anybody charged for it? It's very important. I would like to have an answer on that one there. Then, going to Ria Patala, it's been there for some time. But the more you preach Ria Patala, the more contractors are not paid in time. There for some time, and unfortunately, I repeat again, it's destroying the emerging sector. You will remember, Mandla, when we talk about CITP, is that these guys cannot move from grade 1 to the next grade because they are not paid in time. Finances are very important in construction. You get a contract that you must finish in a certain period. Because this guy is not paid in time, which is your officials, you cannot blame the contractor. The contractor puts his claim. Have you got a system which traces the claims with this Ria Patala? Do you have a system in place where you can say, yes, contractor so-and-so on November has claimed what happened with his claim, and so would you have that type of system? If you don't have, can you please make sure that we have one in place, because we cannot keep on talking the same thing over and over. Then we come to the next one, skill transfer. You know, we'll talk this chairperson for the next 5 years again. We'll talk skill transfer. Unless we do something about it. Now let us go back to the old system, what happened with the old system. You know, you don't throw a child with that bath, with that dirty water. We should have taken something out of the old system. Yes, Chairperson. Let us be very clear. You've got service providers who are paid by the government, who are doing work for the government, either be it contractors or consultants, whichever. But what systems, what have you got in place? What policy? You need to have a policy. The old system had a policy that once you get a contract over $1 million, more or less, roughly, you must then take up interns or apprentices in building construction, artisans, or professionals within that contract. When you had the Kimberley prison, it was over $800 million. How many artisans have graduated from that prison? How many consultants, architects, quantity of ways have graduated from that system? You wouldn't know because you don't have a policy. You need to have a policy that is very clear that anybody who gets work from government must do 1, 2, 3, and then you have a subsidy system. That is the only way of overcoming this skill transfer. And what would you like in the next 5 years? We have the same problem over and over and over and over. You need to come up with a policy for that. Then, coming to the asset register, you know, the government is losing a lot of money of non-vexing of these assets. And I think it's time that you use somebody from outside. Because this has been happening for year in and out. Next year we're going to hear the same thing. The following year, the asset is all. Also will hear the same thing. Either you use some an outside company to do the same, because it is very clear that you cannot do it. Let us not beat about the bush, Chairperson. There is a problem. We've been talking about this for year in, year out. So it's either you get an outside company to do that. For instance, Chairperson, Mama Ngongwa, you would remember very well. In Mthatha, there's no land to be developed. But the government has got land. And if I want to, I can go put up a house anywhere in Mthatha. Anyway. I can. People just look for vacant land and they put up to, and that is government land. So, really, we need to be proactive in this business. We need to be proactive. We don't want to hear again next year that you've got the same problem. Rather, get somebody outside. There are a lot of companies which have applied to assist you in this matter, DG. Unfortunately, the previous DG. Why not make use of them? Because it's just destroying the whole system. So, one would like, Chairperson, that next year we do not talk about this. And then there are some monies that you owe for services supplied by municipalities. Can you just give us a feedback? Are all municipalities paid or not for their services? Because when you get down to local government level, you say, public works owes us so much money. I know once the water stopped, the lights were switched off. The lights and the water were switched off because public works didn't pay the services. Can you try to get on top of this? It's very important because down there, municipalities haven't got enough finances. They say they owe the government. It's a finger pointing type of situation. It's been going on for some time. Can you try to get on top of that? Then, of course, this is in line with what my colleague was saying. The truth of the matter is quite a lot of government buildings that are not being utilized. That is quite true. And on one side, the government is buying buildings from private owners. It is happening, that is true. In fact, in our area, Honorable Chairperson, some businesses have even converted their hotels into offices for the government because they're making more money out of the government than having hotels. That is true. So how do you get this mess up sorted out? You've got the properties. I can name, like we can show you a whole lot of them that are standing, but you do not even know that you own the property. So, DG, one hopes that you get on top of this. So, there are quite a lot of them, you know, the unfilled by the post, you know, and if you look at the letter, we're going to have a doom on here. Let us also if I want to, but really, let us be positive on this. Yeah, let us just come up, please get on top of these issues, because Every year we it's the same thing over and over and over and again. That's why I actually say that I'm happy that Mama Mobutu is doing something about this, because we've always been talking about this one, Chairperson, you know. We are happy that at least there's something happening. So please, even with this asset register, let there be something to be done about. Let us not sit here next year and talk about the same asset register. Come to us and say, this is what we've done. And also find out from us, because we come from different constituencies, we can help you say, there's a government property, there's this, there's this. We are there to assist you, we are public reps. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm going to allow for responses.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm going to address the issues raised by the Honorable Members, and after which I'm going to hand over to Mr. Stanley Henderson to just explore further the issues raised by the member around the ATWP. And then I will then also hand over to the CFO to speak specifically about the issue of current certificates as well as Project Ria Patala. Honourable Chair and Members, the issue of the EPWP is that we extended the invite to all of the 283 municipalities. And we had a representation from over 180 municipalities. My figures are subject to correction, with a number of municipalities sending a number of delegates, which was very good, because then they could participate in the different commissions. Other partners to the summit was the South African Local Government Association, SALGA, which is a very critical stakeholder, as well as the Department of Cooperative Governance. And the reason for that, Honorable Members, is to make sure that we move beyond talking to very clear and specific actions. One of the resolutions that were made in the summit was around the importance of having EPWP as part and parcel of the municipal economic development plans and programs. The second issue that was acknowledged in the summit was the role at the local government level of the political leadership as well as the management leadership, the mayors, the executive mayors, as well as the municipal managers. What also was very clear in the summit was the roles, who gets to do what. It was very clear that the Department of Public Works will provide a lot of technical support to the municipalities. For example, how do we make a project labor intensive? How do we influence the way the municipality pulls out the terms of reference for a tender, such that the terms of reference have got EPWP at the core, as opposed to having EPWP as an afterthought? And that technical support is being provided by the department. But what is also very important is what then after the summit. We have committed to going back to district municipalities and meeting with all the different municipalities in all the regions. We are going to do a roadshow, and Stanley can go into a bit more detail about that, so that it does not stop with the summit, but it continues. So that, Honourable Members, next year, when we have the EPWP summit, we don't go back to the same issues that we covered this year, but we start being in a process of measuring performance and progress to say, where were we, where are we now, and how do we move forward? Because the issue is that we are clear, in our view, within the department, that the targets can be much more aggressive, given the scale of unemployment and the levels of poverty in our country. But for us to do that, we need the support of all the 283 municipalities.
with SANGA playing its role and the Department of Cooperative Governance playing its role. And we believe that that support from those partners is there. We are indeed planning to have a contractor summit and would take lessons, and thanks Chair for the guidance, we will take lessons from the PWP summit and make sure that when we put together the contractor summit, those lessons will filter through. Indeed, the issue of skills transfer is a big issue, and it is for me as an individual, it's something that I'm very passionate about, because the issue of skills transfer is at the core of how we transform government and the way government works. But it is also a very difficult thing, and it needs us to think outside of the box. We will look into the policies that are in the department, but more importantly, it is for us to begin to think much more robustly about the specific areas. And for me, the specific areas for the department fall into the three categories: skills and finance and related areas, skills and property and related areas, and skills and project management. Because if we have those skills at those three levels, we pretty much have covered the mandate of the department, and that is our focus. Indeed, the issue of the asset register is and I would like to steal from the Honourable Chair's earlier statements, that it is bigger than us as a public works department. And I think the issue raised by the Honourable Member Mungu about those properties in Mafeking or Mabato, where it was clear that they belong to nobody. And that, to me, is the crux of the problem we're dealing with around these movable assets. It is these properties that fall between the cracks. And hence, it is bigger than us as a department. And hence, that interministerial committee is very important in this regard. Because that interministerial committee chaired by the Minister of Public Works, with rural development, with finance, with a technical working group supported and led by the Office of the Attorney General, becomes important to say, what else do we do broader as government? So that perhaps the issue that we have to contend with as public works is the issue of when the properties are on the register, how do we make sure that we have all the necessary information and that property register becomes maintained properly. But the bigger question is getting those land parcels onto the asset register, and that's where our challenge is. And it is indeed correct that one has to be careful of defaulting on making promises, Chair, knowing very well that the substance and the extent of the problem is much bigger. And I think it would be naive for us to wish to want to make promises around the issue, particularly the issue of investing, without the considerations and the outcome of that interministerial committee. And I do think that it will become important that as the report comes out of that committee, we, even if by way of a written document, Chair, we appraised the committee of what the outcome of that committee is. The issues of services supplied by municipalities and our side of the story in terms of pay, it is an ongoing issue. And again, it also reflects some of the challenges with vesting. For example, we got a very friendly call about water being cut in one municipality in KwaZulu-Natal. And we sent the regional manager there. And on finding out that the property belonged to the provincial department. And so the issues that plague us go beyond just the department, but our relationship with the provincial governments and departments of public works. And for me, again, this is also a wonderful opportunity of finding some of those properties, because one thing that is happening is that as soon as the municipalities find that the property belongs to public works, they're very quick to bill us, which help us, because in a way it allows us to be able to put it on our asset register. So for me, the issue, I'm looking at it from a positive point of view, to say to make sure that they charge us for the services. For me, the interest is that at least we now know that that is our property and we're able to put it on our security system. The last issue, before I head over to my colleagues, Honorable Chair and members, is around the issue of government buildings not being utilized. Again, there's a bigger issue here, Chair. And it is the issue that we've raised in our MTF document to Treasury about the backlogs in the refurbishment of government buildings. And we can't separate the issue of those backlogs from the issue of leases into the private sector. Because our own experience, even with our own staff at Public Works, of a building that we own that is absolutely in tatters. And it becomes very difficult to expect people to deliver and perform when they're being housed in a terrible building. And so unless and until such time that we address the issue of backlogs comprehensively, it will go a long way in resolving some of the issues of how we move a lot of client accommodation back into state into state accommodation. But the numbers are big for that backlog. I'm reluctant to say the numbers here, but a desktop exercise that I believe was conducted a few years ago had something like close to 100. That's what the number is, about 90 billion, 100 billion. But the number was big, Chair, of what would be the cost of resolving the backlogs. And it is something that we need as a department to think very carefully about and work very closely with Treasury in saying how do we address the issue. Because for as long as we don't address the issue, we'll continue to have a situation where in a number of areas, municipalities and towns, client departments don't want to be accommodated in state buildings.
Others answer. I think it's two people who are going to answer. First, I want to alert you that we are into injury time of this meeting, and I don't want members to leave before we conclude properly. Just to alert you about that. And lastly, that there are people who wanted to have follow up. You'll have to be quick if any. All we are taking is that tea break that we talk of 15 minutes, we pay it back. After that, then we can be released.
Thank you, Chair, Honourable Members. DG has covered the questions around the EPRP in detail. Let me just emphasize that yes, we do have a coherent post-summit program, and that will include the involvement of Vukopili contractors in the way that we go about engaging with municipalities. I will leave it at that.
Just to respond to the issue of a coherent system to manage all the claims, I have to upfront admit that we don't have a coherent system. The systems that we have are very fragmented, and we are not able to trace all the claims within a press of a button. And currently, the registers that we put in place are the only source that we can be able to go back and say which invoices have we not paid, or perhaps looking at the commitments within the WCS system that we are using in Oslo. With regard to irregular expenditure of 82 million, I mentioned that tax clearance certificates were not provided because previously we used to use the CIDB database to say if you are registered with the CIDB, therefore you are compliant. And we haven't subjected any official to any disciplinary measures in this regard. But that system was stopped, I think, 3 years ago, and that is why the cases that were raised are contracts that were running for over 5 years that we are still paying. But that has since been changed in the department.
I want to check if there is anything burning that members can't live without saying. But before I say that, to just note the following. That on the policy matters, we'll have to come back. Just to look into all of them, the CB, expropriation, and whatever else, Adrima, and so on, just to dig over the landscape, because and particularly Kiama, the extension thereof to local government, what is the process, and so on. When in your previous annual report, it gives an indication that you were like on top of the situation, whereby now we should be concluding the matter. It looks like it's still a work in progress, it's too long. Within some of the matters, we need to close and talk about other issues. It's boring to come every year to come up talking about the same issue. The matter that I prefer to talk about every year is the asset one, because we're not going to leave those 5 years without concluding this matter. That one I'm prepared to talk about. And whilst I'm still on the asset issue, I think Babu Kaila is taking shortcuts here. He's raising a very important issue, but to say, give it to outside people, as if that is the answer. This strategy was tried before. It failed. So I'm of the view that let's look into a multiplicity of problems. We went to various provinces. Some of them are using internal CSIR and private companies. So before we just say the only solution is outside people, let's look into that. You see, there are people who have been sitting in our meetings throughout, the gentlemen at the back there, who have informed us privately that they've got a solution to deal with asset registration matters. DJ, maybe you should engage them to check if they've got the solution. So if they are prepared to help, and you do that, you see. You recall that some people are there to look into helping government but also doing business. So that I leave to administration to deal with. It's not my terrain now. The other matter that I want you to just strengthen is the question of mentorship. This issue of skills transfer, we cannot leave it to chance. I'm not suggesting that we have not done anything, but clearly we've got to do more. You see, the department has got to come with a very comprehensive strategy to say, how do we ensure that skills development, skills transfer? This is the last department that should be complaining about skills. You are supposed to be the flagship of skills excellence in the country, because you should be having what it takes, and then followed by education. You see. The vesting issue, yes, we will allow the process to take its course and with all its limitations. Interministerial committee and all that, but please, we will need a report. I don't want us to come back and complain about the same thing. When it comes to the lease portfolio, vis-a-vis the government buildings that are wasted, for lack of a better word, I think we should just at some point dwell into this matter. Also, in particular, about our strategy to say, you know, the property barons in the country are historically advantaged people. Well, how do we help also to try and uplift those who are not in this market? Any questions? Not in the negative way of people who are sometimes abusing this position and flaunting, like it's said in some of your documents. We want to come to back to that later. The issue of the service level agreement. The issue where National Treasury is also asking you to intervene. But also, if you can just give the report that you said, including the profile of those that are signed, and maybe just a copy of a standard service level agreement so that we understand it as well. You recall that we have met, the one that we are going to push before the next meeting, or to understand why it's not signed, is the one for correctional services. We also met with defense, and they raised a whole range of issues about your level of service to them. They were not even aware that they've got some access to maintenance funding. It was new to us. Alright, so it's important that we close some of the gaps. The DG have raised the issue of valuation. I think, like Mr. Dorman was saying and other colleagues here, we need to look into all the permutations in terms of priorities as well. What we're not sure about is this SIU investigation. Is there a preliminary report that is coming? What is happening? I think if I just look into page 76 here also, on investigation processes, maybe it's linked just not on them, on the auditor agency report. that several investigations are currently being carried out within the department related to matters of planting, misuse of state vehicles, conducting business while employed by the public servants, the unauthorizing of government houses for that matter, allegation of overpayment, delay of payment, and irregular awarding of tenders. Investigation must still continue and they must still do this. Can we get some reports in terms of how far and how are we doing that? Babu Gaila, you still count your figures for the Kimberley prison to be 800 million. It's over a billion baht.
Yeah.
So don't be shocked next time when you meet to get the truth. The issue of rates and taxes. I think we had a meeting with appropriation as well to deal with how the province are performing. It looks like, at least for the first time, we start to get some shape on this matter. But if you look on page 62 of the report itself, there is a clear explanation as to why there is an under-expenditure on the rates and taxes issue. Yes, the department must be blamed, but local government also has got its own problems, invoicing and other things. We need to strengthen that part as well. Here comes Pascal. The issue of wasteful expenditure, I think that's a matter that we must deal with. We're going to take a report about this rent issue and other issues that are coming. The buildings that are hijacked, the ones in Gauteng, we're going to get a report on that. And the issue that was raised earlier about the tenants that are leaving the buildings without notice. We just need to before expiration of this, we just need to get to the bottom of that as well. There's a matter that I want to raise here, because that I'll talk to you busy about later on. But that's something that we observed when we were in Pretoria, and so on. Yeah, those are the matters that I'm just highlighting. There might be some thing that I've left out. Members, if we look far ago, Mahu November, you've raised earlier on the question about the 200 million that doesn't belong to anybody. I'm sure they can give it to the Committee of Public Works, we can put it to better use.
No, Chairperson, I've discovered it is on page 72, it's the 67 million rand.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was for the Department of Environment. No. I made a mistake with the irregular expenditure.
Okay, no, I see. Thank you. Hey, Baba, I'm talking to you. No, I want to swallow a fella. Anything from your side before I close? Short?
Nothing, Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay. Mr. Dorman, anything that is bothering you? Good.
Not much, Chair, but because we have known some of the issues when we wrapped up. But it was about the amendment of the bills. If you don't have time frames, really, we will call the wounds, which is smart if you expand.
Amen.
Don't
go.
Chair, I was not happy with the answers, but I left it that I will communicate directly with the Mr. Anderson. I will write letters and emails to the staff.
Okay.
Don't come watch the rights here. No, okay. The issue that you're unhappy about, I think you have an opportunity to deal with them, but also share with us, right? So that we share in your happiness and unhappiness. Okay.
No, I'm fine. I'm sorry. It's just a pity that you didn't order lunch for us. In the future, order lunch for us when you keep us here. Whatever.
No, that's fine. Let me deal with it now. You finished your money. The budget for this committee was exhausted, 100% exhausted. There is no under expenditure taking place in this committee. Okay? And they gave us how much? 150,000? And they gave us 150,000 from a committee that was not working. It's about to finish as well. So that's why lunch is not an option now.
Okay.
Okay. All right. The biscuits I'm told is for after lunch. There's no food here today. So if you both start waiting, go to the restaurant after this meeting. Mamun November, you covered my darling. Good. Mamun?
Chairperson, you're not cutting covered.
Time can never be a political argument. What's your story?
She's hungry.
Okay. For progress.
Yeah.
Okay. No more.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. What I want to say here is that that gentleman said that he was going to investigate about the ranks that are talked about here. But I must also warn him that whenever he goes there to Dondota, he must go past the police station. He must be escorted to this place.
Yeah.
Yes. We were escorted to that place. You must also be escorted to there.
It's a no-go area of some sort.
Yeah.
And also, you know, there came out something. The issue about the Mayville and Aluwal Street buildings. I think you must just go back and talk to Sasa about what you see. Give us feedback as well, because what we said and what she said was also there was a disconnect. About what is happening. You say they are not utilized and empty, blah, blah. She says, no, why, blah, blah. One was full and then they went to the one next door. Anyway, there's another letter.
Okay.
Let us talk.
Chair, stand on the please.
Right. Okay. Egypt, the issues that I've said here is the issue of the vacancies, because I know that the government can never finish. But your strategy to deal with the needs, the strategic position, and all that, I think at some point we'll have to engage on this. The issue of the high level of resignations, I think it's also a matter that we'll have to find some solutions before, whether it's the environment in the department or some outside attractions. I don't know whether you're conducting exit interviews and so on, but we would hate to. The levels are too high that are in the report. Okay? And then the question relating to... the others I think I can leave for now. We can deal with that at a later stage, because there are quite a lot of other issues that I've left out here. Let me take the opportunity. I don't know if there's anything from you before I close, before I say bye-bye.
Thank you, Chair. Chair would like to thank the committee for the opportunity, as well as just the issues that were raised by the committee, because it also helps our thinking in the department as far as resolving some of the issues. And you will agree, Chair, there are indeed quite a lot of issues, and quite a number of ones are meaty and important, and we really would like to find a way of moving forward with this issue. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. I'm just been given a program here, which suggests that you're going to be here for a very long time. I don't know whether this is communicated to you. If I say a very long time, we're dealing with this today. We've got to, this afternoon, try and consider a draft report in terms of the new legislation of the money policy amendments and related matters and so on. We consider it after today. We pressure the time. It seems that next week on the 19th, you may not be here or here, I'm not sure. Is it next week? Well, that is it today, the 26th. We're meeting the Department of Public Works on its financial report. We've received several reports. One is from appropriation that talks about the quarterly reports, the monthly reports from Treasury. We've got also some reports from SCOPA. I'm sure you've seen all the reports that have gone to Parliament. That has got to do with your annual report and your packages that you received last week. All those reports are going to be. So I'm only going to start dealing with other annual reports in November. I'm not sure what are the requirements for that. Can you clarify that?